This is the Paper Planes podcast, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
I think it's important for small and medium-sized businesses to craft the way in which their customers, community, their prospects are going to engage with them and know that people live and move seamlessly between physical and digital worlds and make it go from just a passive experience to actively inviting the readers of their blog to participate.
Welcome to episode number 87 of the Paper Planes Marketing Podcast with your host, me, Simon Dell. Thank you very much for listening in. We have a gentleman on the show today by the name of Ryan Brown. He is based in New York, although when we speak to him, he's actually in South Carolina, hanging with his parents away from New York and the COVID virus. He is head of brand strategy at Seros, who are in New York, funnily enough, and they produce online experiential and immersive brand content. Now, that sounds quite complicated for those of you in a small business world, and you may not know what that means, but listening to Ryan, and he will give you an overview about what they do. He will also explain to you how, as a small business, you can bring some of the ideas that they produce for their big clients into your website and how to produce a better online experience for your website. So, a very interesting guy who used to work, one of his first jobs was at Walt Disney World. So we asked him about that, obviously, because I couldn't let that go. But yes, listen, you'll learn a lot. He does a lot of public speaking, and I think you'll get a lot out of this podcast. Before we jump into that interview, the usual bits and pieces, please rate and review us on iTunes if you get the chance. Come and find me on LinkedIn or Twitter. You can't really fail to find me. There is another Simon Dell out there who does animal photography, and that's definitely not me. If you want to find out what we do, then our website is www.flypaperplanes.co. If you're looking for any digital support in strategy and execution, come and see us and talk to us, and maybe we can help you out. We are changing our name. I recalled this on the 29th of May, 2020. We are changing our name and our brand on the 1st of July, which is just over 30 days away. Some of you may remember that we've already did that once last year. We're actually going to change our business model, which I will do a whole new podcast about and explain how and why we're doing that. So look out for that. I'll have more information over the next few weeks. But look, that's pretty much it from me. We shall jump straight into the podcast with our guest, Ryan Brown. So welcome to the Paper Planes Marketing Podcast, Ryan Brown. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
And you're currently in New York and you work for a company called Seros. But first of all, is New York like the is it just like empty there at the moment? Because my brother lives in Manhattan, so he lives down in Tribeca, and he left the city about 2 months ago. But is it sort of deserted there?
You know, I pulled the move just like your brother, and I escaped 2 months ago as well. So I'm just fronting as still being a New Yorker right now, but I've taken refuge down in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm fortunate that my family. Long story short, I bought a house near where my family lives down here, turned it to an Airbnb, and then I sold it back to my parents right before the pandemic. So, like, great investment in my end. And then no one's Airbnb-ing it, so I'm down here hanging out. So it worked out pretty well for me.
I was going to say, I bet your parents aren't happy with that you sold them that right before the pandemic.
Yeah, they're not too pleased, but they are pleased to have their son nearby. So
I was going to say there's always a silver lining. So explain to me, you're the head of branding. I've completely forgotten what you're the head of there. But
sometimes I do too. No worries at all. I'm head of brand strategy at Seros.
That's it. Yes.
Yep.
I should have written that down. So explain. So for the people listening, give us the overview of what Seros does.
Yeah, so we're an experiential content creation platform, the way I like to describe it, so it's easy for people to understand. When you are looking to do really rich, immersive, interactive content, and likely you'd go hire an agency to custom code or a developer that you work with in-house, we have a visual creation platform that allows designers to essentially build the entire thing without writing any code. So you can build in the rich animations, interactivity, immersive elements. So really making that type of content scalable in a unique way. And it's not something that's like templated or driven by, you know, CMS platforms that have very rigid rules. This is like a very open canvas that allow marketers and designers to do that.
So give us a little bit about the history of the company. I mean, who's behind it? How did they think of it? What was the sort of story behind all that?
Yeah, it was. So the story is actually a merger of two different companies. Saros was first a birth child. So our CEO came over. He ran a media agency and company in London. And as part of that agency, they had worked on a special project way back when that was early stages, like interactive magazine content targeting, coming out of like a publisher, like they were in the media space. And they came over to the US, merged with another company in the US called CrowdFusion, which was a company that had a bit of a platform, but was a big CMS company for, like, they did TMZ.com and a couple other big media sites at the time. And then the two companies kind of merged together, and what is the modern day Saros today was born. But we still have some of the English roots, if you will. If you ever come to our office, it's a highly experiential experience as well. We've got a English pub, full-blown English pub in there with, like, down to a lot of details. There's this gray film over the windows in the pub to give it that kind of like gray, cloudy London feel. But that's kind of the backstory behind the company.
Yeah, you kind of jumped ahead there. I was going to ask you about the pub because I saw the pictures on the website. Like, there must have been some messy Friday nights in that pub.
There can be. I mean, you've got a tech company full of a lot of, you know, you get a lot of fresh out of school folks, but not too much debauchery. I feel like I've aged out a little bit, so I duck out before things get too wild and crazy. But I will say it's been fantastic from a company morale standpoint, and. Yeah. People hanging around at the office over beers, chatting, like you inevitably are chatting about work with your coworkers and bonding. So it's been a really great thing for the culture.
Obviously, you've had a fairly lengthy background for all of those that find you on LinkedIn in advertising and marketing and all those kind of things. But there was one role that I wanted to ask you about in your history, which was the internship at Walt Disney World. And I'm kind of desperate to know if you were inside a Mickey Mouse costume or something like that.
I was not. I was in a costume, but that's kind of anyone that works within the park that's facing, if you will. So no, sadly not in entertainment costume. So I did their college program. This is back when I was like 19 years old. And I, like, you know, I also have a background in theater and was like super pumped to work at Disney. I worked in what they called merchantainment, and like the subtitle there. Yeah. The subtitle there was retail as theater, which basically meant that I wore a costume and worked in the various themed retail shops. It's now Disney Studios at Walt Disney World, but it used to be MGM back at the time. And it's all themed from like the golden age of Hollywood. So you'd find me, working with various like jumpers or suspenders or like
tell me what your costume was. Tell me what your favorite costume was, because I'm now just dying to know what they dressed you up in.
So there was if folks have ever been there or go there, when you walk inside the park, it's Sunset Boulevard is the theme of the street that you first enter on into. Right. And as you turn to the right, they have an old like 50s themed gas station called Oscars. And from that gas station, it was where they vend out like different strollers and stuff. So the outfit, the costume for Oscars was like this pinstripe red, white, and blue jumper with like a little like top hat, not top hat, but like some sort of cap of some sort. And it was completely ridiculous, but a lot of fun.
I'm going to assume that you really miss dressing up like that every day.
Oh, yeah. totally.
I mean, that sort of brings me to, you know, that sort of brings me around to what you do as, you know, head of brand strategy. Walt Disney you know, one of the iconic brands of the, you know, 20th and now the 21st century. When you worked there, and obviously that was early on in your career, and, you know, what do you learn from working somewhere like that about branding and, you know, building a brand?
Yeah, I've always loved Disney. I think the first thing that I learned is that making the magic behind the scenes is not as magical as it is in front of house. It's like a robust logistics like web of things of how they do it. I mean, this was back in, for me, 2003, 2004. And even then, like, we signed into a computer and it spit out a receipt and it like deployed cast members all throughout the park and like how they ran everything. But from a branding perspective, what attracted me there in the first place, and honestly, what I still love today, I recently, right before it closed and for my birthday, I got to go there again and experience back at the same park that I worked at. They opened the whole new Star Wars land there.
Right.
And holy cow, the theming and the new attractions that they've done just were incredible and mind-blowing. And that's what inspired me to kind of want to go work there and intern there from the beginning. So from a brand perspective, what I love so much is how intentional Disney is as a company and as a brand, like down to the trash cans, to the sidewalks, to like when you're in the bathroom of the parks, like they extend the universe, the story. And, you know, I think the best brands out there, even if you're not going to a Disney World, think in those same terms. And it was really, really cool to immerse myself in that environment. Now, as an intern, I didn't get full exposure to all of it, but it was pretty interesting to kind of just be part of the team that was bringing that experience to life to the park guests every day.
I never forget, and there's a book I read a couple of years back by a couple of brothers, Dan and Chip Heath. And the book's called The Power of Moments. Yes. I don't know whether you've read that. But it talks about Disney as one of those brands that has the capacity for you. If you go back and ask, and just the way you've spoken about it now, but if you go back and ask anyone about, you know, one of their most memorable experiences, memorable brand experiences, they'll often say to you, "Oh, that time I visited Disney." And the thing that Dan and Chip Heath write about is how the good thing that Disney does is it creates these spikes of amazing immersive experiences, brand experiences that often offset all the shit stuff that you don't remember about when you were going to Disney World. You know, like the long queues that might be there or the fact that your hot dog wasn't great. But the spikes, the brand spikes are so, you know, those moments in the brand experience are so high that's what sticks in your mind. Do you think that's still a thing when you've gone back to Disney World recently and seen, you know, what's happening there with, you know, say the Star Wars stuff?
Yeah. So I didn't, I'm familiar with the book. I can't believe I haven't read it, but I'm pretty sure what they're talking about or writing about there, right, is the peak end rule.
Yes. And, yeah.
That the fact that like our brains cheat, right? They're like always looking for a shortcut. And when we reflect upon an experience, we have place an outside importance on these peak moments that you're describing, as well as the end of the experience. So I often actually talk about that from when I sometimes at conferences and events from stage, is how marketers can use that in the way that Disney and others do to create those moments that stand out, that are more memorable. But yeah, I think you're spot on. I mean, half the time at Disney, if you're waiting in the hot, say if you're in Orlando in the middle of summer, it is hot as balls there. You're sweating, you're in line, there's screaming kids. Like, in any particular moment, you're not like, this isn't great, but they do such a great job creating these like exceptional peaks that just stand out and they resonate with you. One thing I do think though, and I'm curious your take on it, is I you know, you can still get some peak moments at like the janky amusement park down, you know, in your neighborhood or whatever. Yeah. But what I find to be, this is, I don't know if this is written about in this book. This is a theory that I have. I think Disney is able to get like a multiplier on their peak end rule because they're able to connect so holistically the experience with these little mini moments as well. So whether it be hidden Mickeys, little elements of the queue experience, yeah. There's all these little things that like tie back as you go around that just like enhance it. And I think there's that multiplier effect for companies and brands and from a marketing perspective, if you're able to not only engineer peaks, but think holistically, and you give those little touches that maybe are moments that other people would overlook or not think about. And if you catch someone and like, oh my God, they thought of that too.
Yeah.
Even in those small moments, they stand out, and I think they're really exciting opportunities for marketers to look for those.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other interesting story I always recount to people is the reverse of this, is that if you provide a great experience that doesn't have any peaks, it's really easy for that entire great experience to be completely demolished by a single poor experience. And the example I often use is a survey I did years ago after having traveled from Brisbane to Sydney, which for those of you that don't know, Australia is about a 2-hour flight. And when you do that journey, it's like an internal flight is in North America. You're on the plane, you're off, you don't really think about much. But Virgin asked me this survey, and they asked me all these questions about everything except the flight itself. None of the questions were around the point when I got on the plane from the point when I got off the plane. They didn't care about that. And one of the questions they'd asked me was how I'd got from the airport to my hotel. And I'd got, in that instance, I'd got in a taxi and I'd been standing in the rain, well, not literally in the rain, undercover, but I'd been standing for an hour waiting for a taxi outside of Sydney Airport, which back then when I did this had, you know, very bad kind of access to taxis. And it made me realize that what Virgin had realized was that you could have this fantastic experience with Virgin all through the flight, boarding, getting off, collecting your baggage, buying a ticket right early on, all those kind of things. But if you spent an hour standing in the rain waiting for a taxi and someone then asked you, how was your journey? You were going to turn around and tell them it was shit, irrespective of everything else that happened. So, you know, to your point is that, yeah, it's very easy to ruin a great experience. And if you don't have those peaks, that's one of my theories.
I think you're spot on. I mean, and Virgin is definitely a brand that I admire. And I mean, I think what Richard Branson has done in his other companies from a brand perspective is pretty incredible and phenomenal. But you're right. I mean, I think the fact that, you know, Virgin had the perspective to do that survey, and I think that's the lesson there for me and for marketers is twofold. One, what you said is if you aren't engineering the peaks, you've got to be mindful of that. But two, sometimes there could be things outside of your control that you might miss if you don't widen up your point of view. And yeah. I think that's a really exciting opportunity for people as well, is like, people often focus on the experience, the during, but there's so much opportunity pre and post, and to look at where are people coming from and where are they going, how they're entering into and how they're leaving it. And do you have an opportunity to step in and make that an even better experience? And I think by Virgin running that survey, and if you just look at the way in which they had crafted the entire experience from how you check in to how you board the plane to the during the plane experience, I think they do such a great job putting themselves into the shoes and the persona and like experiencing it from what it's actually like to go through it as their customer. And so it's so simple and so obvious. Yeah, I feel like so many companies miss that. And it's not even just have to be on consumer brands too. I think B2B companies need to take that same lesson and apply it as well.
Let's sort of turn back to Seros, because obviously, for those people who've looked at the website, Seros.com, that's spelled Ceros.com. You know, you talk a lot about, there's a lot on the website about experiential, immersive, you know, and when you're dealing with the brands that you're dealing with, the marketers and the marketing managers and directors and CMOs and all those kind of things, you know, they generally tend to understand experiential and immersive and all those kind of things. Most of the people that I deal with in my business are probably at the other end of the spectrum, that SME market, you know, 1 to 200 employees, those kind of things. explain to them why, you know, I think we all understand now why it's important, but why is it important online? Because that's, I think, the last place that often a lot of businesses think that they need to produce some sort of experience.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, again, we work with many great companies, but when we first work with a company, I can say holistically, even large companies still struggle with that exact challenge, what you're speaking to. But back to something that you said earlier, and I think this can help connect the dots to what you and I were talking about. And I think this is applicable to any size business. You know, we spend a lot of time now just talking about how can you have these experiences that are going to create these peaks or like be memorable or stand out with people. And what I see when people think about their digital their brand and their digital marketing is either one, they might not think about experience too much. They're just like, I need to accomplish these marketing goals or objectives. Or two, there is a lot of talk these days around digital experience and what does that mean. But one of my pet peeves is everyone's trying to make something a better experience, but their definition of a better experience is there's a lot of more affordable tools and stuff out there nowadays, which is like, oh, you like cats, and I know you like cats, so I'm going to show you more cat content. That's good, and you should have a better experience, but that's not going to be something that stands out. That's not like, that doesn't elevate to a level of an experience. And so in addition, in our effort to create better experiences, I think we need to strive to actually create experiences. And that's the one thing I think people need to focus on. And if, you know, we're recording this now in the middle, you know, of the pandemic, which you brought up beforehand, suddenly people's digital experience for a while was almost their entire experience. And it really highlighted this overlooked aspect of it, right? So when we're all only accessing people virtually this way and companies' websites, all of a sudden you're like, wow, this is a sea of same. A lot of people are doing the same things. Yeah. And I think it's important for small and medium-sized businesses to you know, want to craft the way in which their customers, their community, their prospects are going to engage with them and know that people live and move seamlessly between physical and digital worlds today. And it's important to craft both those experiences and for both of those worlds.
So in that case, let's be specific, because again, I think it would help people who are listening. When you say create a great experience online, what does that really mean? And if it would help, like, do you have some sort of examples of people that you've worked with in the past that you go, you know, this is where they were before and this is where they are now, and, you know, this is how the experience has changed?
Yeah. Well, I think there's two ways that we can break it down. One is tactically of like, what does it look like? And what we refer to and talk about is experiential content. And what I find the easiest way to explain to someone of what I mean by that is by answering the question, what makes content experiential? The bulk of businesses today, any size, but certainly small and medium-sized businesses, feel very comfortable with, I would consider, like three different elements: the narrative of the content that they're creating, the visual aspects, so whether they have image, graphics, photos, and the third level, which is integrating that with, you know, their marketing tools or other third-party things. So embedding a form, a chatbot, or a widget, like that is kind of what can constitute most of digital marketing today. There's two other levels that I think can be brought to the creation process when thinking about content that make content more experiential. The next level is interactivity, and there's definitely a lot of people out there who will know about interactive content. But the element of interactivity allows you to do really cool things, such as choose your own adventure. So imagine this, instead of just a list of 10 recipes for the holiday season, instead you could have a fun choose your own adventure, like pick your kitchen god or goddess. How much time do you have? Do you like it spicy or not? And then suddenly you can arrive at a curated recipe for you from the 10. And then you can go back and click through all the different things. It invites active participation. It's much more memorable of an experience. And instead of, you know, most of the content before, which is linear, you start at the beginning with the text, you read through it, and there's some visuals. This allows you to create even more of a journey, or use it to gamify things. And the other level beyond that, which we talked about before, is this immersive level. So being able to build content that uses, whether it be sound, animation, or motion. So one of the ways, if you, this is an example I always give. So to, I'll bring it back to the digital world, but to make it make sense of, well, what do we mean by immersive and why is that important? I was at a business event. Now this is back when I was at an agency. I was in Dubai and I had this experience at a hotel, which was the first for me at the time. And I got put up, thankfully, and this is like a really nice hotel. I remember going up the elevator to my room and I'll never forget this experience as I opened the door to my room. I opened it and I stepped inside of it. And there was like this just like grand fade of the lights in the room that just revealed this multi-level room, which was gorgeous. But as I like stood in there, and then as soon as the lights faded, immediately after that, a giant curtain parted from the center, revealing this like floor to ceiling panoramic window. Yeah. And it was like the most breathtaking view. And that the like fade up of the lights and the draw and the motion of the curtain just gave me these like goosebumps. Now, if I walked into the room, I would have been impressed, but like that orchestration of that motion and that movement just like took another level for me. Bring that back to the digital space. Same thing is true. If you're trying to tell a story as a company or a brand or bring to life your product or whatever it might be, you can use that same element of immersing people with, you know, creating an environment where things are moving, things are animating on, they're fading in, they're dissolving. You can set an environment on these phones and devices that can come to life more than a static PDF. And you also have the ability to get people to directly click and engage with it. So long-winded answer, but trying to help people understand there's so much more to the content that you can be creating. And it's getting them to start adding in those two elements. What can I do with interactivity and what can I do with immersive elements when I approach creating content?
We worked with a Brisbane-based company last couple of years back and called Dream Farm. Dream Farm make kitchen utensils and they're a global company now. They sell a lot in American retail stores. They sell a lot online. They sell a lot through Amazon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They always do every year on their website, which is an e-commerce website. They always do this little thing around Easter called a little gamification called Find. I think it's Walter Wabbit. It's a little cartoon rabbit that they bring out in Easter that literally hides in the website. And there's a little plugin. It's a WordPress website, so if I remember, maybe there is. I think there's a plugin that does this, or it was a little bit of development and a little bit of coding, but it hides the rabbit around the website. And of course, then they announce that to all their customers and say, if you find the rabbit, there's a special gift there for you. Of course, a lot of their customers spend hours on this website trying to find this bloody rabbit. You know, and it's a hugely successful, and people now look forward to it every year to see if they can find the, you know, where the rabbit's going to be and what the rabbit looks like this year and all those kind of things. And obviously the knock-on effect is that it grows their sales. So fantastic brand that they have, fantastic little piece of innovation. They carry that kind of stuff through their, you know, through their social media and, you know, through all of their communications. They have a real personality. But I guess my question from what you said and using them as an example, where would you suggest, you know, again, back to the sort of small business example, where would you suggest that people invest that time and effort? If they want to produce something, you know, immersive, where would they do that on their website? Because they may not have the budget to do like the whole website. So what would be sort of an easy, quick win for them?
Yeah, I think first, you know, the other half of it is the mindset. So how you put we talked about this before, putting yourself into the shoes of people. But there's a lot of platforms out there today that allow you to start dabbling with this, right? So there are definitely cost-effective tools and platforms out there to create different interactive content, whether it be polls and quizzes. That's like some low-hanging fruit, but it's a great start. And so I think for small and medium-sized businesses to look at ways, so let's say they are blogging. And in addition to just a text-driven blogging approach, you know, there are tools out there that they could build into it, things that will allow them to gamify it or add some polls and stuff to it and make it go from just a passive experience to actively inviting the readers of their blog to participate. And also, there's other content tools and stuff out there that might help make, say, data visualization a little bit more interesting or animated. Like something that they could do is, you know, if they do have access to a designer, subtle little animated GIFs that you can create in Photoshop and whatnot, well timed or placed in the content as well, can actually just give it a little bit more life and movement that can help make it more fun and engaging as well. So that's some like low hanging fruit. And, you know, over time from there, being able to scale up and play deeper in those different layers.
You also mentioned early on about how, you know, the B2B marketplace does a pretty poor job. It's quite easy to sit there and go, you know, if I'm a commercial brand or a consumer brand, you know, it's quite easy to think of these kind of, you know, ideas. But, you know, if you're a lawyer or a solicitor or, you know, one of those kind of service-based companies that perhaps isn't that exciting, do you think it's still applicable to them? And if so, again, where would you sort of look at investing for those kind of companies?
Yeah. I mean, we have a ton of those clients that fit that profile, to be honest. So a couple thoughts. There's been this misconception that somehow B2B marketing needs to be more sterile and like you're marketing to another business, but that's, you're still marketing to other humans. The humans that are at that business that are getting your marketing go home at night and watch Netflix and go on experiences and go drinking on the weekend with their friends. Like there's no difference for the people that work at a B2B company or a B2B consumer. So our clients that have found to have broke out from that norm. So if you happen to find yourself in one of those industries that I would say, or you might feel if you work there, lag behind where consumer brands are or other cooler industries, maybe like tech industries, the clients that we've worked with who've like broken out from that early have just seen really positive impact on increased engagement, the sales and marketing performance they're trying to drive from it. You know, some simple things. People that rely heavily on white papers and PDFs and ebooks.
Yeah.
Transforming those into more of a digital experience using some of that interactivity or immersive elements has just been gangbusters in the impact that they can drive. And it's not just even top of the funnel marketing. It might be engaging your current customers. It might be doing better ways to deliver whatever your business might be, a recap of the relationship and onboarding document. They've just found that from engagement and retention, all that, it just has profound impact in those same industries that you just mentioned.
So you've obviously, you've been doing this for a while, but tell me some of the brands that you see out there doing this kind of thing really well.
In the digital space, I'll be honest, I struggle a little bit because I'm so in the weeds on what our customers do. And I will say like a big part of my job is when I go and speak at conferences, it's a little bit of people being like, oh, wow, what he says makes a lot of sense. But I've realized that the past decade in digital marketing, it's become very institutionalized in the way that we think about it. You know, one of the biggest, I think, change in the past, you know, several years has been like ABM and account-based marketing, but getting people to like take a step back from what is like a prescriptive approach to the content that they create, I find to be a little bit challenging. So I apologize that I struggle a bit to sometimes find examples outside of the customers that I directly work with, but I will give you one that we work with who has really impressed me as of late. They're an ad tech company called GumGum, and they've done some really interesting, exciting things. Now, they've been working with us for the past, I think, 3 or so years now, and a couple of different angles. They've just infiltrated this in the most beautiful way, experiential content throughout their entire business. But I guess two examples that I can share with you is, their clients were big like media companies and agencies and brands. And so they're big deals that they work on. And they used to spend good amount of money on really creative ABM campaigns, like the types that you buy big billboards, or you build a custom made like arcade machine and you ship it to people's office, like really cool stuff. But they found ways to start shifting and creating some of those like really cool digital experiences in the digital space. And at first complementing it. So when they were building out these physical ABM things, they had really cool digital components. And then they've been able to successfully launch some ones in digital that have been really cool as well. And the other thing that I want to share about them, which I just think is so cool, is they had a huge event strategy. And in 2020, they were planning to participate. The number was like more than 200 events. And they so quickly pivoted from those events to creating these really interesting little like online experiences in place of it. So within like week one or two of when everyone here in the States went into like lockdown, they spun up this really fun experience, which is like come gather around the campfire with the Gum Gum team. And it was so cute and well done in the way that it was like this journey and the animations. And they hit upon this idea of like, hey, we're all in this new experience together. We're all like camping at home. And they created really cool personas for different type of people, from like the night owl to like the at-home school educator to whatnot. And they paired it with really fun content or ideas or games or things that you could do. And they did that so quickly and they pivoted so fast. So, that's just one example that I can share.
Well, last few questions for you today. Taking a step further from that, forget about the online experience. You know, you're in brand strategy. What are some of the brands out there, and big or small, that you buy, that you go to all the time, that you think, I love this brand, I wouldn't buy anything else?
So it dawned on me like a year or two ago, and this kind of snuck up out of the blue, and I'm not sure how familiar this might be in Australia, but one of the big major U.S. airlines is Delta Airlines.
Yep.
And they have just won my heart over in the past few years, almost out of the blue. But, you know, if you look at what their strategy has been, it's been all around focusing on the experience, and from their customer loyalty to the experience on the plane to in their clubhouses. And it's interesting. I think Virgin has a fantastic experience as well. And Delta has done it not as flashy, but just so focused on doing everything right and making it all work together and creating just like a consistent thing that just like hits upon like the needs that a human would want. And so that's one. It's funny. I was thinking about this the other day, and I don't love using Apple, right? Because it's so cliche and everyone does. But I just got a new MacBook Pro,
right,
the 13-inch one that came out. And I have to tell you, when you unbox a MacBook or any Apple product, that unboxing experience is still one that is so rewarding and so exciting. And they still do such a good job with their in-store experience. So as much as I feel like it's lost a little bit of their luster, they still do an exceptional job at their entire ecosystem, from digital and physical world. And then one other I'll share with you is one certainly most people on this podcast probably have never heard of, but there was a gym I joined in New York City called Mark Fisher Fitness. And it was at a time when I had taken a few years off from like going to the gym for a little while. And I needed to get myself back into it, but I needed a safe space, right? Like I had joined like this really like bougie gym near my apartment in Hell's Kitchen when I lived there. And I was like, oh crap, I need to go to like another gym to work out before I can go to this gym.
That sounds so New York. Anyway, go on, carry on.
Really embarrassing to admit that. But anyways, a friend of mine was like, oh, have you heard of Mark Fisher Fitness? And then like, if you go to their website, it's like, they talk about like, come join us. We have a clubhouse, a ninja clubhouse of glory and dreams. And it's they've got like unicorns and rainbows, and it's the most over the top thing. And it was started by like, I think some former Broadway performers. And it's the most inclusive, welcoming space. I did this like summer boot camp, and they had like a little fake fire that we did there. It was just, they were serious about fitness, but not about like, they were like just like normal humans. And it just made an environment that was so much fun. And so from their website to the instructors, everything that was there, it just was such a fun, inviting experience. So those are some of my examples.
Oh God. Yeah. You said every time I've been in New York, that sounds exactly like something in New York. go to one gym to prepare to go to another gym. That's, yeah. I'm not going to forget that one for a long time. Mate, look, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time on the show today. Really, really appreciate you making the time for us. Last question. If anybody wants to get hold of you, what's the best way of reaching out?
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, if they can find me on LinkedIn, Ryan Brown, and I think it's, I don't even know off the top of my head, I think it's like RM Brown. Otherwise, on Twitter, _Ryan Brown_ is another way to get me as well. So.
Okay, perfect. Mate, thank you very much for your time today, and enjoy your coming weekend.
Hey, Simon, thank you so much. This was great. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks very much to you guys for listening in. Thanks very much to Ryan Brown, the head of brand strategy at Seros. Once again, before I go, just a reminder that if you can, please go onto iTunes. It takes you 2 minutes. Rate and review us. You don't have to write a review. Even if you just go into iTunes and punch the 5-star button. We're also available on Spotify. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And we'll see you next time.